Thank you.
Come on up. So, well, yeah, you want to sit there, that's fine. So my understanding is the clerk's office has indicated that the appellant will have, Erica will have 8 minutes, and the appellee cross appellant 8 minutes, and the state 15. Is that everybody's understanding?
It is, Your Honor.
Correct.
Okay, very well. So the appellant can begin.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Pope. I represent the appellant, Erica Johnson. She's the parent and the mother of the two children in 249 and 250, Roper and Logan. As far as background on this case, this appeal followed a 3-day termination of parental rights trial on January 11th, 14th, and 19th. On the 14th, the state moved to amend the pleadings at the end of the day, end of day two, to include a new allegation under subsection 7, 15 of 22 months allegation. Following argument on that, the court took it under advisement, and then on the 19th, the court granted that motion to allow the state to amend to include that third allegation.
Is there any dispute about the time frame involved under subsection 7 here in terms of how long the children were out of the home?
There's no dispute on that.
So really no evidentiary issues that were contested with regard to that allegation?
No, Your Honor. Primarily the issue, as outlined in the brief, is that the state moving to amend on that second day and granting the court granting that on the third day was a due process violation. And that's outlined in the brief as well, Your Honor. But as far as the allegations, 43-292, subsection 2, 6, and then 7 that was allowed, the court found by clear and convincing evidence on each of those grounds, and that, and additionally found that Ms. Johnson was an unfit parent. Focusing on that error, as we allege in the brief, that Ms. Johnson's due process rights were violated by allowing that, there's a 3-part test regarding whether due process fights, what type of due process is required. As outlined in the brief, it's Ms. Johnson's argument that her due process rights were violated by allowing that to continue. The 3-part test is that, is there a protected liberty interest at stake? Yes, parental rights are a substantial right. And what procedural protections are required? At least notice and an opportunity to respond. Allowing, moving to amend on the second day of a 3-day termination of parental rights trial is, should not have been allowed.
But again, what harm was there, I guess, for lack of a better question, to the mother or the father in that amendment, in that you've agreed there was no dispute about the time frame that the children had been out of the home?
Well, there's a best interest analysis on a 15 out of 22 months. Allowing that to happen at the end of the second day, we'd already had numerous witnesses.
Well, all it did was add another statutory ground on top of the other couple that were already pled. And this particular statutory ground, as Judge Moore is framing here, is that no one disputes that it applied under the circumstances. So it wasn't a matter of going out to get more proof, or, you know, there was no harm or prejudice in that way, was there?
Well,
everybody agreed on when the kids were removed from the home.
Your Honor, the the harm was that there was two allegations in the original petition. The court found, after allowing them to amend, that on this third ground, the state had met their burden and terminated or found termination on that third ground. So that's the harm.
Not solely, though.
But not solely.
Not solely.
They, yeah. They found on the other, on the grounds that were already pled, say.
So the court did find on the two original grounds that the state had met their burden, but then additionally found on this third ground that the state had met their
burden. Well, before you run out of time, let's talk about the best interest as it relates to the mother.
Yes, as far as the best interest is concerned, the trial outlined that there was an attachment with these two children and that Miss Johnson was bonded with these children. She'd had visitation throughout the entirety of the case. So I think the evidence would show that it was in the best interest of these kids that Miss Johnson's parental rights not be terminated.
And I think the trial court, you know, indicated it was having some difficulty. It was sympathetic in some ways to the mother, but the underlying problem was, at least the evidence shows, she was having difficulty detaching from the father.
Yes,
and the failing to protect the children.
In the evidence, Miss Johnson did testify at the termination trial. And she'd outlined that it took her some time to detach herself from the relationship. But I think it was, if I'm recalling correctly, in November, she had completely detached herself from her husband and had moved towards getting a dissolution of marriage, completely separating herself from her husband at that time.
There was no evidence that she had actually filed.
There was no evidence, no pleadings or anything of that sort. I think it was testimony.
And how long before the trial was the evidence of her having the kind of the phone contact through the jail?
I think it was, if I'm recalling correctly, prior to November of 2020.
Okay. But do you know how long?
How long?
I mean, when you're telling us that the evidence was that she had cut off the contact between her and Eric, what was the evidence as to how much before the trial that she...
I believe it was in November of that year, of 2020. The trial began in January of 2020.
So about 2 months before.
Yes.
Okay.
If there's no further questions, it looks like I'm about up. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
On behalf of Mr. Freeberg, I'm Audrey Long. I was his court-appointed attorney out of, started in Sioux County and transferred down to Scottsdale County. And your honors, I guess we understand the issue of the 15 out of 22. I want to highlight a few other ones prior to that. There was a reason for a removal. The court can see that the factual reasons for that. That was not Mr. Freeberg's child. With the discontinuation of Ms. Freeberg's relationship with him, he has no legal interest, no legal connection to that child. So when it gets down to our issues, one of the major ones is that the lower court delegated its authority to HHS and said, do whatever you want with visits. And unfortunately, if Mr. Freeberg had appealed that decision, we would be stalled out even further whether or not that was appropriate. So,
but it
unfortunately,
was a final order?
Huh?
Was it a final appeal
I believe it was at that time, Your Honor. And so we could have, and I understand that. And it's a gamble that parents have to take. Either we stall and get this right or this wrong corrected, or we move forward. At that time, Mr. Freeberg had a decent working relationship with HHS and had no indication in May of 2020 that HHS was going to drop the hammer and say, good luck to you, go get a court order. And we did. And we have standing to bring that issue to this court's attention because we filed a motion that you unilaterally cut off our visits in July. We need a hearing ASAP. Unfortunately, because of how it worked up there, we didn't get heard until August. And then at that time, that lower court punted it down to Scottsbluff County. We then had to refile and say we need some visits. So I disagree with the state's assertion we don't have standing. We do. We brought it to the court's attention. We tried. We tried twice. And even at that point, then the HHS says we don't have to. We don't want to. And it's concerning on a couple issues is that, one, Mr. Freeburg made 100% of his visits. He was prepared. He engaged in activities. There's absolutely no safety concerns noted by any family support worker.
In 2020, what periods of time was he incarcerated?
He had a short stint in February for a couple of weeks, and then it was in the latter part of August of 2020. And that began the stint for a sentence in Scottsbluff County that led into the Nebraska Department of Corrections stint. So he was free from jail, if you will, from September of 19 up until 2 or 3 weeks in February of 2020, and then out again until August. And that kind of leads into my reasonable efforts issue, but I think what's of concern is that HHS admitted people that had their children removed for drugs and issues and other abuse, they have visits. If they're high, they still get visits. If they're drunk, they still get visits. Even if they're not making their visits 100% of the time, they still get them. What this came down to is there was a personality conflict, and HHS said, you know what, we don't care, we're done. This after having a conversation with me and asking that we have a meeting on this, to which HHS never offered a date. There's exhibits in the record, Your Honors, that say, hey, we want to do this. When can we do this? They finally just said, we don't have time. We had to go to court. That leads into the next issue of the reasonable efforts that we have a huge contention with here. The state's obligated under 43.283.01 to provide efforts. It's not maybe. It's an obligation, and I highlighted that in our brief. And they have to prove, if you're going to terminate under subsection 6, that the efforts provided to the parent were reasonable and that the parent failed to comply all or in part. And it has to be a willful noncompliance. The issue is, and I brought my computer up just to say what the case plan strategies were, and if you look at what he was asked to do, he did all that. The issue is, he did it on his own. The one thing that HHS provided by way of an effort when it meant to meet these goals was a parenting evaluation. That was prior to my representation. But then, unfortunately, the lower court and the state said, well, you didn't follow through with some of those recommendations. And what's interesting about that parenting evaluation, it talks about having some and focused on empathy-type therapy and discipline. I asked HHS, where was it? We don't know. I specifically asked Ms. Goodell, did you do anything to figure out what these recommendations meant and how you could help Mr. Freeburg? No. That was her answer, was no. That's not an effort. Specifically then, also, when he was ordered therapeutic visits, Susan Michael, who, by the way, the doctor is not a doctor of psychology. I want the record to be clear. She has a degree, a doctoral in art, not in psychology. She's just a licensed independent mental health practitioner. That being said, she says, and I'm not going to. And then HHS admittedly said, good luck, go figure it out yourself. That's not a reasonable effort. So Mr. Freeburg went ahead and tried doing what he needed to do. He engaged in some online courses. He did his own medication management. He tried finding a counselor that worked with him. He finally got to one that was challenging him towards the end of the case. And the issue that we have to look at, was there an attempt to better the situation? And there constantly was. The issue is that when HHS said, I don't like what you're doing, I don't like these classes, I don't like this therapist, or I don't like this medication management, they never said, by the way, this is what we expect you to do. So you can't have it both ways.
Let's maybe move forward to the termination before you run out of time.
Sure.
So there's evidence of injury to one of the children.
Correct.
He first denies it, then sort of admits it and has conflicting stories as to how it happened. The record doesn't show he's really admitted or addressed what brought the children into the system in the first place. And then we've got evidence of some domestic abuse. What can you respond to that as to the reasons for the court finding the termination was appropriate with regard to Dad?
Sure, Judge, and I actually disagree that he did not acknowledge that. It took him time to verbally say those words, but I think there's other actions that he took to show he was acknowledging. He could have forced those children to come in and testify. He could have still pushed his innocence at that point. by him taking a plea deal and admitting that there was an excessive discipline issue, that in and of itself says, I acknowledge I did something wrong here. Everybody knows when something like this happens, not one person immediately says, yep, I screwed up. That's not how these cases work. It takes some time to unravel all that. So I disagree that he never acknowledged it, because he did.
Can you explain to me the sentence in your brief where appellant states that Logan needs absolution? What does that mean?
Judge, that was a comment my client had made. We were allowed to take his trial deposition. I try to get him to expound on that. But the way I interpret that is Logan needs to understand that this was not okay, that Mr. Freeburg did error in what he did that day. And by doing that and showing that is, I'm taking these steps to better my situation. That's the way that I interpret that statement from Mr. Freeburg. So with respect to the other findings, Your Honors, you can't find there's continued neglect. This issue of abuse never occurred throughout the rest of the case. The therapist who had one session with Mr. Freeburg, who then denied continued family sessions, she even later admitted the letters that Mr. Freeburg writing is appropriate. He had a house the whole time. He had a job. He provided food on his visits. He did his medication management. He attended classes. He made progress. There was no further issues of abuse or neglect throughout the entire case. That leads to the issue of best interest under the unfitness. There was absolutely no statement whatsoever that said there is some long-lived infirmity from Mr. Freeburg that will require, that will not be able to be fixed in a reasonable time.
What about his attempts to pressure Erica into presenting a false narrative to authorities?
Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time. May I answer that question?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I disagree with the characterizations of pressuring that. I think there was an issue of what can we do to get out of here and that comment was made when this case is done. People want to hear what it is and interpret how it is, but not hear the whole context behind it. So I disagree that there was pressure on changing the story. And if there was, that was at the very beginning, before any admissions were taken place, where any plea agreements had been entered into by Mr. Freeburg, to then start this progress by working with HHS.
And your position is that Tannen's therapist, where she's expressing concerns about Tannen being groomed by his dad and becoming codependent and essentially defending his father's actions, that's just an inaccurate assessment?
I wouldn't say inaccurate, Your Honor, but I would say it's not complete. Ms. Michael refused to meet with Mr. Freeburg at all throughout the entire case, refused to meet with him to try to see if that was true. So with not having the understanding of who Mr. Freeburg was or even trying to address whatever her concerns were, I think is an incomplete statement to the court of what she believed or didn't believe. She was emphatic to say, I'm not working with this man and I refuse to work with this man. And I think it's very telling, if you're going to provide an issue of reasonable efforts and that of showing best interest, that we've exhausted everything, which includes meeting with the children's therapist so she could gather a sense of who he is, what it is, if there was progress being made. So that is her statement, but I believe it's an incomplete statement because she didn't have the whole picture. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Travis Rodak. I'm appearing on behalf of the Appalachian Scottsbluff County. I'll start with address Mr. Pope's part of the case real quick here. The 15-22 part of the case, I feel like that's pretty simple in the sense that this was a mathematical calculation, and nobody disagrees. That's completely agreed upon. So the question becomes, was the other side prejudiced by this being introduced so late in the game? And I don't think they were. And part of the reason for that, one thing that hasn't really been discussed much is this was chalked up over three separate days that were several days apart. This came after day two. So there was at least 5 days warning between day two and day three. Where this was a mathematical calculation, it's not like it was a new allegation of being financially unstable or something where you'd have to bring in, you know, a bunch of new evidence or it'd be very difficult to combat that. This was just simple math, and where I think that they had at least 5 days notice, plus it was readily apparent from what was going on even in days one and two. I think that was acceptable, and there's long-standing history of courts allowing, you know, criminal court, juvenile court, et cetera, allowing you to amend pleadings to conform to the evidence. So my position, our position, is that that was acceptable, and we'd ask you to basically affirm that ruling. As far as the clear and convincing and establishing the other grounds, these kids were out of home for, you know, 16-plus months. HHS had some pretty distinct plans, goals, as far as what they wanted him to do. Identify positive activities, community resources, support systems, actively participate in visitation, participate in circle security, and implement the techniques, create a network of people. They presented all this framework, and nothing really happened. No, there wasn't really a lot of progress made throughout the pendency of the case with regard to mom. And so I don't think that the case law says that you've got to, you know, even if they're making some progress, you can't just sit there and let the kids linger forever and ever and ever, and the progress goes on indefinitely. I think at this, there just wasn't enough progress. There wasn't enough that was being done to warrant that. So I think the findings under as far as the best interests and all of that were accurate. I think the court was accurate in that. So even if you can't get to part one of the 15 to 22, I think if you get there, the analysis stopped. It was 15 to 22, and it was in their best interest. I think there's ample evidence in the record that it was in the best interest to terminate mom.
Well, so the allegations with regard to mom initially were failure to protect the children.
Correct.
Right? She wasn't abusive toward the children. So what evidence was there of the things she did following the adjudication to ensure the safety of the children?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue there is not maybe so much what she did, but what she didn't do in terms of she was still basically maintaining a relationship with or trying to maintain a relationship with people who were going to be problematic to the kids.
People.
Meaning significant others, husband, et cetera. There was still this continued desire to bring people into the kids' life that were going to be problematic.
Other than the father?
Correct, yeah. And I think there's evidence in the record that suggests that just these toxic relationships were not in the best interest of the children. And
so at trial, though, the mother testified that she had cut all ties with the father and was planning to divorce him.
But that didn't happen.
Well, at that point it happened, right?
Yeah.
So why not give her a little bit more time?
That's fair. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily you know, unfair to suggest that, but this has been going on already 16 months. So I don't know how much, I mean, these kids needed permanency. I don't know how much longer you can let that go. What event would have been the culmination of her efforts? I mean, did she have to divorce him? Did she have to find a new relationship that was supportive of the kids? And how long would something like that take before it would be, you know, are we talking 25 months, 30 months? I mean, how long would something like that take to develop to a point where the court would feel comfortable with her having gotten to that point, I guess?
What about the father's arguments?
Okay.
The department did not provide reasonable efforts.
Yeah, and again, I think the department did provide reasonable efforts. First of all, and we know that incarceration in and of itself is not a reason to terminate, not a reason to do anything. But however, I mean, the department had Ms. Rainey and other people that said, look, we are trying to do these visits while he's incarcerated. It's not healthy for the kids. It's not healthy for him. But even above and beyond that, they couldn't find a therapist who was even willing to say, yeah, I'll do this. And so I don't know how they could be forced to do something that just wasn't feasible in the therapeutic world.
What about Ms. Long's criticism of Tannen's therapist not being willing to meet with Eric? Wouldn't that have some adverse impact on her ability to fully evaluate Tannen's needs?
I think that would to an extent, but I think we've got other evidence that suggests he was struggling to even recognize what he needed to do. I believe there's a quote in the brief from the trial, something to the effect of, might have been in the deposition, is that he was flat out asked, what do you need to do to better yourself to get through this? And he really couldn't answer that question. And then he continued to do a lot of things throughout the pendency of case that really called into question whether he seriously even acknowledged he did anything wrong. And I don't see that there's any evidence in the record to suggest that ever improved or that ever got better. And then as far as the other parts of Dad's part of the case, again, I think the amendment, the complaint for visitation was one of the other issues. And again, I think if you were going to complain about visitation, you had to appeal the final appealable disposition order. But even having said that, if you go back to that, the visitation, they tried to do the visitation. I mean, they made efforts, extreme efforts to try to get that. It just didn't make any sense for a variety of reasons. And the therapist wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't think the court can force the therapist to do something that is against their recommendation and their mindset in terms of what's in the best interest of it. I think there was clear and convincing evidence that this was termination was in the best interest of these kids. And the 16 months that this went on, I think you could probably argue that it could have been filed even earlier in the case. I know there was a transfer period down from Sioux County, but it was clear from the record in both of these matters, things just weren't improving. There wasn't any improvement. It was basically spinning their wheels, doing the same things. Nothing was ever getting any better. And I don't think there was any reasonable indication that it was going to get better. It has more. I don't think more time would have changed anything that wasn't already done. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No. Thank you.
Did the appellant have any additional time? I know the light was yellow when you sat down, but I don't know if you recorded that or not.
Mr. Pope had 15 seconds left.
You have 15 seconds if you want to respond.
I can quickly. Your Honors, we would just request, as outlined in the brief, that the state did not meet their burden as it relates to Ms. Johnson by clear and convincing evidence that her rights should be terminated as outlined in the brief.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for your appearance here today.